Welcome to CounselorAudioSource.net. Counselor Audio Source is a weekly podcast dedicated to the professional enhancement of practicing counselors, supervisors, and counselor educators. Look for us on the web at CounselorAudioSource.net. I'm Dr. Marty Gentius of Kent State University, and this week, contributing editor Dr. Chad Royal interviews Dr. Gwendolyn Newsom, both from North Carolina Central University, regarding counseling veterans returning with post-traumatic stress disorder.
This is Dr. Chadwick Royal, and I am here with Dr. Gwen Newsom. I wonder if you might start by telling us a little bit about yourself and your counseling background.
All right, be glad to do that, and thank you so much for doing this interview. I think this is a very important topic. I've been in the counseling profession since 1978, and I've had a variety of experiences working in high schools as high school guidance counselor. I've worked the majority of my professional career in higher ed. However, within the last 6 or 7 years, I've had a wonderful opportunity to work with the VA, and I've had an opportunity to work with veterans. As a part of just my academic background, I think I've just done what the bulk of us have done. You know, you get your undergraduate degree in psychology, and then I got a master's in counseling and worked for a while and really enjoyed it. And I think I did a non-traditional thing by later in life, kind of going off and deciding to torture myself and with a doctorate degree. But it's time well spent.
Oh, yeah.
Time very well spent.
Okay. What led you to working with veterans?
It was actually the work that I was doing as a part of my doctoral studies. I was very interested in stress. In particular, I kind of became interested in stress because I was interested in resilience, and you know how we follow those trains. And as my interest in resilience grew, I understood that the way individuals tend to mediate stress may be an indicator for certain wellness factors. And as a part of that work, as part of my doctoral work, I had an opportunity to work with veterans diagnosed with PTSD. And it was kind of a natural tie-in with respect to the stress work. And at that point, I kind of felt a niche because it was such a rich area. And this was the pre-9/11, so who knew that there would be so much interest in post-traumatic stress as a diagnosis and its symptoms. But that's kind of how my course led me to working with veterans, just through just natural curiosity and my academic work.
So this focus on resiliency kind of lending itself as a response to some type of trauma. Are those reactions, those stressful reactions and diagnosis following a PTSD, is that typically the type of thing you saw working in a VA setting?
For individuals who have experienced traumatic stress, there can be varying ways that they respond, but in particular, as you know, when an individual experiences extreme, uncontrollable stress, kind of overarching thing is a sense of hopelessness, just that perhaps death is imminent, a total lack of control on the environment at that time. And for those individuals, that can be expressed by way of kind of re-experiencing what has happened, avoiding the stressful event, in some instances having some hyperarousal, hyperstartle responses, because you have to understand in looking at how individuals experience this trauma, it's just something that's just outside of the norm. And so those experiences stay with the individual by way of the re-experiencing hyperarousal, et cetera. You say with respect to resilience, as I think about the question, the way you posed it, I would say that some individuals may handle their symptoms a little better.
Mm-hmm.
What has happened for a lot of folks who get out of the military in particular, depending on, they can kind of lose themselves in their jobs or lose mm-hmm. themselves in other areas of their lives, and they don't experience those symptoms as intensely. They're able to cope. They're mm-hmm. using some of their other life experiences as coping mechanisms. The problem with that is, however, is that the symptoms do play out. And for a large number of veterans, it's a lack of understanding, well, what is this thing? What's happening with me? And as because of that training that they've had as soldiers, there's mm-hmm. an inclination to want to manage it because mm-hmm. that's what soldiers are directed to do. Mm-hmm. If there is a problem, you handle it.
Mm-hmm.
And so maybe you could perceive that as resilience, but the bottom line is undiagnosed, untreated, for the vast majority of persons who have these experiences, they result in negative consequences in terms of their relationships, perhaps for some with those very jobs that they've kind of thrown themselves into. So it is kind of a situation where there is a need to get in and take a look at what's going on mm-hmm. and provide some relief, number one, to the symptoms, and then providing better coping mechanisms.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, for the ones that perhaps that we would see in a setting, the ones that are kind of recognized and would perhaps be in some type of treatment, if you want to call it that, have you noticed any particular individuals or perhaps groups or subgroups that might be maybe a little more resilient than others? Is there a way to even kind of predict that?
I'm not familiar with it. If there is, in terms of subgroups, there are different ways that PTSD can be experienced based on one's gender, mm-hmm. Based on one's cultural background. In particular, for example, with women veterans. And I think I need to go back and clarify. I am particularly looking at veteran populations of those individuals who are no longer in the military mm-hmm. Who have experienced combat. And these are the folks that tend to be, for some of them, to be out there without any type of treatment. There are many who do take advantage of those resources that are available through the VA. But I think in terms of the counseling profession and what we can offer not only to clinicians, other counselors, and for students in training, there are two things I think we need to recognize, that these veterans are among us. Mm-hmm. Oftentimes we are not aware. Those might be the people that we encounter in the grocery store, our coworkers, other individuals. So from that perspective, just kind of being aware. And then the other perspective that I think is very important would be with the family members, mm-hmm. Because with each returning veteran, there are family members, there are significant others, there are perhaps children. And so when you look at those individuals, then we're talking about a large number of people. Now, within that context, the PTSD experiences can vary by gender, as we were speaking earlier.
Mm-hmm.
A number of women have experienced sexual trauma as mm-hmm. just a result of gender. And among soldiers of color, in particular African Americans, Hispanic, Native Americans, just to name a few, there have been some stress experiences that have been related to culture.
Mm-hmm.
For example, among African American veterans, the stereotypes that are kind of a part of our culture, unfortunately, carry over into the military.
Mm-hmm.
And so there is a sense of camaraderie that is anticipated by soldiers that have, where they have to kind of they have the sense of anticipation of camaraderie, but those stereotypes kind of get in the way. Mm-hmm. And I guess that means that for some individuals, joining the military is perceived as a part of their duty as mm-hmm. a citizen. Mm-hmm. And then to have that expectation come in contact with stereotypes that might be limiting or stressful can exacerbate, I think, some of the stress experiences. I work with a group of folks, and we do try to take a look at just the role of culture mm-hmm. in the experience of PTSD because of just the racial discrimination and the kinds of ways that those experiences can be traumatic. How do they interact then mm-hmm. with the combat experiences? Now, and in this particular instance, I'm referencing African Americans. Hispanic veterans have a different kind of experience. Not only is there the discrimination, but then there's also just the basic, I think, assault to identity in terms of, well, what are you? Are you white or black? Mm-hmm. And in reality, the answer is neither. And so when you look at the incidents, and the National Center for PTSD has a nice site that provides a lot of statistics mm-hmm. that kind of back up some of the things that we're discussing. But when you look at that information, the incidence for PTSD is higher or has been reported as being higher among Vietnam veterans at any rate mm-hmm. For Hispanic veterans just because of that basic denial of self. And having Hispanic veterans being put in a position where they have to define themselves in terms of who they are not. Mm-hmm. And that can have some very lasting kinds of effects.
Okay. Well, you've mentioned how some veterans who have seen combat, the combat veterans, and their reaction to PTSD, is there things that you've seen, particularly with relation to the impact of culture with combat, you noticing differences between those who are seeing combat versus those who are not?
I do not, because basically I have worked only with combat veterans. And so for those veterans who have not seen combat, if we're talking about combat-related trauma, now there is an argument that would say that basic training itself is traumatic, mm-hmm. and so that increases the incidence of a likelihood of traumatic stress. But there are other types of experiences that can be a part of military experience that are not related to combat, such as accidents, depending on the type of job description, MOS, a soldier might have, that may have some type of traumatic outcome similar to what would happen in a civilian population, for example, an automobile accident. The way we would see it here would perhaps with a military vehicle maybe having an accident may result in some type of traumatic experience. But I think by and large, the focus that we're looking at has to do with being able to provide that assistance to individuals who've been in combat, probably because it's the least understood or the least appreciated, at least until recently, by civilian populations. We have an idea, well, you know, you're a soldier. You go to war, you fight, and then you come home. Mm-hmm. And we have kind of an interpretation of that experience that means, so as a soldier, you're equipped to deal with it. Mm-hmm. One of the most rewarding experiences that I've had in working with veterans is to come to the recognition that war is indeed hell. Mm-hmm. This is just not a figure of speech that we use, but individuals who are exposed to war by way of combat are submitted to very uncivilized, just conditions that would almost be impossible to fathom mm-hmm. as a civilian. And so when we take a look at those kinds of experiences that they have, it's that focus on that combat experience and then that readjustment that I think by and large, until here lately, I mean, we knew it was there, that there were adjustment issues, but mm-hmm. again, going back to reference 9/11, I think we've had a refocusing on the ideal that we need to pay attention to the readjustment and how it does occur, and not only among the veterans themselves, but again, how it plays out with their families. And again, to go back to reference Vietnam veterans, a lot of the work that has been done in recognizing and validating the need for readjustment, counseling, and that kind of thing has come from the research in terms of the experiences with Vietnam vets. Of course, you and I might be too young to remember all of what that was about, but historically speaking, in the early 70s and the latter part of the 60s, just coming back into the country could be traumatic for some veterans in terms of the way they were greeted. And so those experiences become a part of those war experiences as well. It's just that whole thing of not only the inhuman situations that are associated with war, but then the reception upon returning. So those are two pieces in particular that play a part in understanding what some of those readjustment issues might be.
I guess what I would notice is, you know, I perhaps a lot of my experience with respect, at least the Vietnam War, has been through the media. I've seen either movies or documentaries or things about that, and you know, comparing those times to perhaps now, I guess I get the sense that society has made an attempt to alter that reception type experience. In your perspective of a counselor working with combat veterans now, what would be perhaps some ideas or suggestions for counselors in terms of helping that either reception or just readjustment in general?
Well, in particular, as I mentioned, Chad, sometimes we just don't even know that we're working with individuals who may have war experiences. So to maybe assess for whether or not they're a military personnel in a family, if they have been deployed, if they're coming home, that's a huge part of understanding what counselors might have to address in terms of working with those clients. Making a determination with respect to whether or not an individual has been to war. And if there is that determination, or some indicators might be if there are, again, some of those classic PTSD-type symptoms, and in particular anger, having problems with anger management, unexplained anger that doesn't seem to quite fit the precipitating event, those might be some things that counselors might think about. Wonder where this anger is coming from, and then kind of go down that path to get some broader demographic background. If there's problems sleeping, that's another type of indicator, difficulty in sleeping, which is related to a lot of nightmares where there are these dreams that are very intrusive in nature, and they're a part of the reoccurrence associated with having traumatic experiences. That's one of the large pieces. So in working with clients who may have any of these experiences, that could be possibly a little red flag for a counselor to go ahead and assess for PTSD.
Okay. I guess I want to focus just a little bit on the current combat situation, the activity that's in Iraq right now. It sounds like you've seen a variety of veterans from different wars. And in your opinion, do you think there are any differences between those returning from Iraq versus those who have returned from a previous war?
Well, one of the things we like to say is trauma is trauma.
Mm-hmm.
And so a traumatic experience, regardless of the type of war, whichever war it was, is still going to be traumatic. Right now, there is a focus in the government to provide services a little early on. Mm-hmm. There are more outreach counselors whose job it is to be available for troops who are returning, so that there's a recognition that these services are available and that they are provided information on PTSD so that they would know if there is a need for follow-up, let's say, with a VA facility. But in general, different wars might have different triggers.
Mm-hmm.
Different odors are associated with different wars.
Mm-hmm.
Different visual stimuli are associated with different wars. And so even though these triggers or stimuli may vary, I think the key thing is recognizing that there are triggers in our environment. Let's say for you and I, they may not necessarily be traumatic, but for an individual who's experienced that particular stimuli in a war zone,
mm-hmm.
it may precipitate flashbacks or that kind of thing. An example of an odor, airline fuel. I mean,
mm-hmm.
we go to the airport and you may smell airline fuel, and that's all it is. We're in the airport.
Mm-hmm.
We're about to board a plane. But for an individual who may have been in a combat zone, some of those same smells
mm-hmm.
may be associated with being shot at, with seeing individuals being blown up, or those kinds of things. So, again, you know, we're looking at the different wars. We're still looking at identifying the kinds of triggers, weather, time of the year,
mm-hmm.
Whatever the terrain might be,
mm-hmm.
Hilly terrains, jungle terrains, obviously sand,
mm-hmm.
high temperatures. All of these kinds of environmental triggers
mm-hmm.
may serve as a stimulus for some of the veterans across their specific wars.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Anything that you found particularly successful in working with veterans in general?
As I mentioned earlier, being aware of anger management, giving some hands-on tools
mm-hmm.
Are particularly useful. Time management, communications, assertiveness, relaxation, and those are symptom management
mm-hmm.
types of techniques. But then cognitive emotional processing has been used in its current therapy of choice right now in terms of providing veterans with a way of identifying and changing their thought processes related to the kinds of experiences that they've had. Also being aware of just the need of recognition of family counseling,
mm-hmm.
Again, because of the relational part of this piece, and couples counseling can also be useful in working with veterans. In particular, allowing a platform for their stories to be heard and validated,
mm-hmm.
which is not unusual for counseling, but in particular this is important for soldiers because a part of a soldier's training, again, is to be able to endure.
Mm-hmm.
And so there is often a lot of guilt associated with these experiences because
mm-hmm.
For many individuals, there's this idea that, well, you know, I'm trained, I should be able to handle this, so why can't I sleep? Why can't I manage my anger?
Mm-hmm.
Why am I isolating? Why do I not want to be around people? So to be able to hear those stories about what is going on with them and to validate those experiences as a part of just responding normally to abnormal situations. Earlier I said that, you know, this idea that war is hell, that is an abnormal situation. As a part of our human response, we go into shock.
Mm-hmm.
But because soldiers have been trained to kind of work through that, there is a degree of emotional numbing that can be associated with being able to cope with those situations. So to come back and as a part of that readjustment, to still be numb, to have all of these things going on. I think the best thing that counselors do is to recognize that this is a horrific experience and that it's difficult to talk about, and that the steps that are involved are certainly involve developing trust to the extent that these things can be talked about.
It sounds like your recommendation was for inclusion of family or couples or whatnot. I guess that would also be relevant for anyone that's currently deployed as well. I'm guessing that might not be the type of people that you're seeing right now. It sounds like that you're seeing people that are have returned from combat, but it sounds like that even while the soldiers are deployed, then allowing that time for sharing of stories from the family would also be
that. Excuse me. That would be appropriate for those family members. Going back to the soldiers themselves, the inclusion of families and significant others comes at a time when the soldiers are or the veterans are ready to talk about their particular stories. And that might be a treatment goal to include family or to include significant others to share some of their stories with them. So that's a part of what's important for veteran treatment. In terms of the support for family members, being able to associate with others who might be having these types of experiences would be important, even as the individual is deployed. One of the things in looking at one of the other areas where counselors can assist in this transition process is to, in working with families of soldiers, to recognize that sometimes homecomings are not the glorified experiences that they are anticipated to be. An individual goes off to war, they fight a war, they come home, you know, you plan the backyard barbecue, and your guest of honor goes in the house and closes the door and doesn't want to be bothered. We might see that as antisocial behavior, but in reality it is an adjustment issue. Transitioning from a war zone where all rules are pretty much suspended or they appear to be suspended or counter to the type of training an individual has, and then the expectation to come back and just jump right into the barbecue. Sometimes that is a very difficult because of, again, recognizing that the kinds of experiences that veterans have had just don't lend themselves to oftentimes initially feeling comfortable being around others. So a part of what family members we can help family members with is just recognizing that this is a very difficult process for some individuals. If the returning veteran chooses to talk about their stories, family should be willing to listen in a non-judgmental type of way, just to hear those kinds of things, but then to recognize that, you know, other types of support, other types of counseling would be available. For family members also, recognizing that this loved one might be different in certain kinds of ways. Maybe they're not feeling as comfortable. Trust becomes a reestablishing trust within a relationship might be important, because in a combat zone, you know, training is very important, and you rely on those individuals that are your comrades that you are fighting with, and it becomes a kind of little unique entity unto itself. And so readjusting back into a family environment, sometimes it's really difficult because those relationships in combat are life or death. A bad choice in one of those arenas may result in someone dying. And so that level of association is intense, and then to bring it back, it's almost as if these family members cannot be trusted to the extent that there might be feelings that issues are life or death, when in fact they are not. So when the loved one comes back home, just a recognition that there is a difference, and to be a part of a network of individuals who have others that come back. And again, these are ways, I think, that it's important for counselors to know the backgrounds of their clients, because we may have clients who are experiencing vicarious trauma. Maybe mm-hmm. they didn't go to the war zone, but suddenly they're having anger problems and avoidance and not wanting to be around others. Mm-hmm. And it could be as a result of being with an individual or having a significant other or some important family member who is exhibiting those experiences. So as a part of the family member's kind of traumatic experience, they take on secondary characteristics. So that is where family kind of comes in with that, recognizing that there is going to be a difference and or it is very likely or it's highly likely that there will be some type of difference, and for counselors to recognize how that might be expressed when we are working with individuals.
Mm-hmm. Well, Dr. Newsom, thank you very much for your time.
Well, thank you so much, and I'd just like to say thank you for doing this, because, again, working with veterans and their families, I think, is a very important work, and it's important for counselors to do that. And one of the things right now I think it's important for us to discuss is that within the VA right now, most of the counseling or psychotherapy positions are associated with psychology and social work, and for those of us who are involved with advocacy, there's huge work to be done in that area, because there is similar training that goes on, and so individuals within the counseling profession are trained to do this work, and I think that it's important. We owe it to our clients, and not only in our private practices and within our schools, but also in the broader VA system, there is a place for counselors in that environment.
So we need to advocate with our people in the legislation to make sure that counselors will be recognized by these organizations as people that can be employed.
Yes.
Well, thank you again for your time.
And thank you.
You've just heard an interview with Dr. Gwen Newsom by Dr. Chad Royal regarding counseling veterans with PTSD. Look for previous podcasts, show notes, and listener feedback on the podcast website at counselaraudiosource.net. Listeners can leave comments or questions for our interview guests or hosts through our Skype.com internet telephone ID, Counselor Audio Source, or by calling 330-871-4242. Counseling techniques and interventions discussed in the Counselor Audio Source broadcast are meant for use by counseling professionals, and Counselor Audio Source is not held liable for any use of the techniques mentioned in the program. Our music bed today is Memorial Day from Jamie Beauchamp. His and other PodSafe music can be found in the PodSafe Music Network at podshow.com. Counselor Audio Source is licensed under the Creative Commons, a nonprofit organization offering a flexible copyright for creative work.